Saram, dear listeners, and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang. I am Team Radio Sai's Bishu, and today, by Bhagwan's grace, we have Brother Sai Giridhar joining us for the Satsang. And in fact, Brother Sai Giridhar is today with us as a Sai Sanidhi member. Those of you who have known him, in fact, he has been there many times earlier for Vahini Satsang and many other programs on Radio Sai. He recently completed his PhD in the discipline of chemistry and now has been blessed by Bhagwan to serve in his mission from Prashanthi Nilayam. He has joined the Sri Satya Sai Center for Human Values. So he is now here as a Sai Sanidhi member, and I'm really grateful to Bhagwan that he has made it possible for him to come to the studios today. So welcome, brother, to Vahini Satsang.
Sai Ram, brother. Thank you so much.
And congratulations for this beautiful opportunity that Bhagwan has blessed you with.
Indeed, I am very, very grateful to Swami for this wonderful opportunity, because, you know, there is no greater joy than to live every moment of your life, you know, directly doing His work. And that is something that we all look forward to, and I'm very grateful that Swami has given me an opportunity to continue. So that's really wonderful, and I would say that today's topic that you have chosen is also equally wonderful.
Yeah, so we have to go into chapter 14 of Prema Vahini. And last time we had done the first two segments of chapter 14, and we had Professor Venkatraman with us. In fact, given the birthday schedule and the opening of the archival building, sir was so busy, and in fact even now, once the building is up, there's a lot many things to do there, so he could not come today. But I'm really happy that Bhagwan has enabled you to come. So we will move on to the third segment of chapter 14. Can I play that?
Please.
మట్టి నుండి ఘట స్వరూపమును వేరుచేయ ఎవరికీ తరము కాదు. ఘటము యొక్క స్వరూపం కల్పితం. ఘటకారణమగు మృత్తిక మాత్రమే సత్యం. అవిద్యచే కల్పింపబడిన నామమాత్రం గల కుంభము స్వరూపంలో ఎట్లుండును? కారణము కంటే భిన్నంగా కార్యం ఉండజాలదు. ఈ సర్వప్రపంచం నానా రూపాలుగా ప్రతీతమగుతున్నదే కాని జ్ఞానమందు ఆయా రూపాలు స్ఫురింపక అధిష్టాన బ్రహ్మం మాత్రమే గోచరమగును. ఆత్మకంటే ఇతర వస్తువు గోచరింపకుండుటే అద్వైతం. దృశ్య ప్రపంచమే సత్యమగునేని సుషుప్తి కాలమందు సహితం ఆ ప్రపంచం తెలియవలెను కదా. అదింతమాత్రం తెలియుటలేదు. కనుక స్వప్నకల్పిత ప్రపంచము వలనే దృశ్యకల్పిత ప్రపంచం సహితం మిథ్యయే. ఎట్లన భ్రాంతి వలన త్రాటియందు ఆరోపించిన సర్పం యొక్క స్థితి అధిష్టానమగు త్రాటి కంటే వేరుగా కనబడుటలేదు. త్రాడే సర్పముగా తోచినది, కాని త్రాడు సర్పము కాదు కదా. అటులనే సర్వాధిష్టానమగు బ్రహ్మము సత్యము, కాని ప్రాతిభాసిక ప్రపంచము అసత్యము. ఆకాశమునకు ఘటమునకు సంబంధం లేదు. ఆకాశం నిర్మలం, ఘటము మలినము, కాని ఆ ఘటమునందుకల మద్యము యొక్క దుర్గంధము గగనమునకు అంటదు. అట్లే ఉపాధియగు దేహమునకును పరిశుద్ధాత్మకును సంబంధమేమియునూ లేదు. లింగదేహకృతముకు కర్తృత్వము వీడగనే ఆత్మ ఆయా పుణ్యపాపముల ఫలము చెందదు.
మడ్ అలోన్ ఇస్ రియల్. ద పాట్ కాన్షియస్నెస్ ఇస్ బోర్న్ ఆఫ్ ఇగ్నోరెన్స్ రిగార్డింగ్ మడ్. మడ్ ఇస్ ద బేసిస్, ద సబ్స్టెన్స్ ఆఫ్ ద పాట్. హౌ కెన్ అ పాట్ ఎగ్జిస్ట్ వితౌట్ మడ్? How can effect exist without a cause? The world appears as multiplicity only to the ignorant. To a jnani, Brahman alone, Brahman, upon which all else is superimposed, exists. The Atman alone is cognized by him. There is nothing else. That is the Advaitic experience. If the world is real, it must be cognized even during the stage of dreamless deep sleep. But we are not conscious of it at all. So the visible world is as unreal as the dream world. Just as through illusion, a snake is imposed on a rope, the world too is imposed on Brahman. The snake and the rope are not seen at the same time. The entire rope is the snake. So too, Brahman is all this world, all this vast variety of name and form. But this imaginatively conceived variety is fundamentally false. Brahman alone is true.
So that is one of the most fundamental truths, the basis of what we understand as spirituality, isn't it, Brother Giridhar?
Totally. In fact, this straightaway reminds me of a most extraordinary experience which Bhagwan gave way back in the year 2007. I go back to this because there are a few of Swami's teachings that when they hit you, they are life transformative. They change you forever, you know. And those are the key factors. And I'm sure some of the listeners may have heard this particular story earlier as well. But it is so critical. You know, Swami says that I keep repeating this, the same idea, the same truth again and again, so that it sinks in deep and it sprouts as an experience. In fact, here Swami very nicely says that this Advaitic experience, that is, Advaita is not a philosophy. Of course, there is a philosophy called Advaita, and there is Vishishta Advaita and Dvaita. Those are philosophies. And philosophies are basically for intellectual clarity of understanding the truth and the concepts about the truth. But the Vedas very clearly declare, yato vacho nivartante aprapya manasasaha, which means, yato vacho nivartante, that is, that which cannot be described by words, aprapya manasasaha. Why? Because it is not in the comprehension of mind itself. You know, unless the mind is able to kind of picturize it and crystallize the idea, it cannot flow in the form of words. So Vedas make it very clear that what we are talking about here as the Brahman or the Atmic experience is something that is beyond the mind. And Swami in a Dashara discourse made it very clear. And he said, every human being has got these components. He said, see, there is a physical body and then there is mind. And then there is the self. And Bhagwan said, those who identify only with the body, they are animalistic in nature. Like, see, all the animals that you see around, yes, they are instinct-based. Yes. So they work for, as the Sanskrit shloka goes, ahara nidra bhaya, yes, maituneshu samanya metat pashubhir naranam. That is, between a human being and an animal, ahara food, nidra sleep, bhaya fear, and maituna, that is procreation, these four aspects are common between human beings and animals. Samanya metat, it's natural and it's common. But it is common at the physical level. So Swami says, if an individual follows his body all the time or is identified only with his body, then he will exhibit animal nature. That's what it means.
Yes.
And if an individual is completely identified only with his mind, his perceptions, and he feels that there is no other, you know, perception which is right in the world, or his desire fulfillment is the only, because mind is just a bundle of thoughts, or, you know, thoughts, yes, that stay long enough become desires. So mind is just a bundle of desires. So if somebody is so overwhelmed by the idea of fulfilling their own desires, he might turn demonic in nature, because he might become insensitive to the people around him. He might become insensitive to nature. And we see classical examples of that today, where people, in order to fulfill their desires, their ambitions, are destroying families, are destroying nature, are destroying everything that is coming their way. So that is demonic in nature. If they're identified only with their mind, filled with desires that, you know, that lead in this direction. Then the third thing that Swami says is, the one who integrates body, mind and conscience, that is one who follows the conscience and directs the mind and body to act accordingly by integrating body, mind and the Atma, is a human being. And one who transcends body and mind is divine.
Yes.
So, by this definition, we all know that within us there is divinity, and that divine aspect transcends body and mind. So, obviously, it cannot be articulated in words and it cannot be conceptualized. So, Swami, to emphasize this, says this is the Advaitic experience.
Yeah.
Because this has to be an experiential understanding,
yes,
not merely an intellectual journey. Having said this, I would like to come back to that beautiful experience which Swami gave in the year 2007, where Swami had selected a few speakers for the Chennai Atirudra Mahayajna, and Bhagwan had sent word for us, and immediately we rushed to the interview room, and within moments, you know, Swami was asking us, what topic will you speak on, you know?
Mm-hmm.
5 minutes before that, we had no idea
that you are part of the
trip. And in his infinite compassion, you know, Bhagwan calls us and then he inquires about us. He very lovingly, Swami asks, Swami to Chennai ko vastava, will you come with Swami to Chennai? And, you know, my heart just melted away at that moment, and I fell at his feet and I said, definitely, Swami. And then the Swami we know is so filled with compassion, but he's also our guru, our,
yes,
Sadguru. So constantly he's looking at how to refine us so much, as Swami says, that you take a piece of gold and the goldsmith puts it in the fire and he keeps hammering it. Somebody asks the goldsmith, how long are you going to, refine,
yes,
this gold? And he says, I know it's pure,
yes,
when I can see my own reflection.
Yes.
In the gold, you know.
Yes.
So Swami loves to do that, and that was what was happening. So followed by the compassionate love of Swami was an immediate statement where he said, what is your topic? I'm taking you all to give talks there, or rather to be speaker boxes.
Yes.
Swami would say, but to stand there and, be,
yes,
his instrument.
Yes.
But then Swami straight away asks us, what is the topic? And we had no idea. So whatever was coming to our minds, they were articulating.
Yes.
There's four other brothers there. And when my turn came, my mind was actually blank. But somehow just a thought came. I said, Swami, there is only one God. And Swami heard that and he said, that's a bad title for a talk.
So not interesting enough.
Yeah, means you can't have a talk that says there is only one God, it cannot be titled that way. So Swami gave a title to the talk. And Swami said, Atla kaadu, not like that. Ekam sat, vipraha bahudha vadanti. Itla chappu, he said. So I said, Swami, ekam sat, vipraha bahudha vadanti. Hey, atla kaadu. Again, Swami, repeated this and said, see, you should not put both the, ekam sat and vipraha bahudha vadanti in the same line. He said, ekam sat. That is the ultimate truth. Truth is one. God is one. Brahman is one that pervades everything. Actually, other than that, there is nothing.
Yes.
Vipraha bahudha vadanti. Here, vipraha bahudha vadanti means great vipras or vidwans,
yes,
have expressed this in different ways. The same experience of the truth.
Yes.
So, here, vipra actually doesn't mean priests in the general sense. Many people usually translate this as priests or scholars, express this in different way. But the real meaning is those who have experienced this Advaitic wisdom, experiential wisdom, contextually based on the student, the culture and the environment, they articulate it that which cannot be articulated in as close to the truth as possible, to the experience as possible. So that is why Ekam Sat, Swami said.
Ekam Sat is complete by itself.
Complete by itself. And Vipraha Bhavata Vadanti. In fact, just to highlight this point little further, we had a Unity of Faith conference recently,
yes,
which was so tremendously charging, so beautiful.
Yes.
And it was so filled with love. I'm sure those who were present in Prashanthi Nilayam, those who saw the program on, through Radio Sai, live streaming, I'm sure they were overwhelmed because so much of love, so
yes,
much of unity was,
yes,
experienced that day.
Yes.
There was a similar conclave that took place few years ago where Swamiji had come, I think it was Swami Dayanand Saraswati ji who had come, his ashram is there in Rishikesh.
Yes.
And when he spoke, he made a very beautiful point. And he said, the issue is today that people say that there is one God. Because some people try to kind of personalize that God, and then say that there is only one God and that God is so and so only. So he says that is the issue.
Yes.
Then he made a remarkable statement, which is actually the crux of Sanatana Dharma. Sanatana, that which is eternal.
Yes.
And which transcends all religions and all ideas. So in Sanatana Dharma, he said, there is not one God, but there is only God.
Yes.
And that is Ekam Sat.
That is what is the Advaitic experience.
That is the Advaitic experience.
Yes.
So Swami, used to, every time he called us after that, that first interview, we had a few sessions in the bhajan hall, few more sessions in the interview room. Swami would again and again ask me to repeat this title. He'll say, what is your title? And then I would say, Swami, Ekam Sat Vipraha Bahudha Vadanti. And again, he wouldn't be happy about the pause, the gap between Ekam Sat and Vipraha. He would say, Atla Kadu, tell emphatically, Ekam Sat Vipraha Bahudha Vadanti. That way, And then it struck me that maybe Swami wants me to ask him directly about something. Because, see, our duty here as mouthpieces, literally just being his instruments, is to convey what he has spoken or what he has directly taught us. That is our duty. So, to share this, the teachings is the only thing that we need to do, I feel, in my opinion, than to, give an interpretation of it or anything like that. Of course, there will always be context, there will always be some amount of personal experience that comes into this. But it is very important to present the words of Swami, because the same set of words that Swami speaks, we understand it in one way at one point of time in our life. But as we move ahead in our life and in our own sadhana, the same set of words, evolve in its meaning for us.
Yes. they continue to give us new meanings and deeper
new
meanings.
Insights.
As you contemplate on what Bhagavan has told you, especially if he has told you something directly,
yes,
I think that is something that you have to constantly contemplate on. That,
yes,
that is going to be a lifetime sadhana.
Yes.
Yes.
So here, in fact, coming back to, what was played just now, chapter 14, here you have marked it as 14, verse,
yes,
3.
Yeah.
In this third segment of chapter 14, Bhagavan very clearly says that actually there is only one. And that same Brahman is pervading in everything. He goes on to say, mud alone is real.
Yes.
The pot consciousness is born of ignorance regarding mud. Mud is the basis, the substance of the pot. In fact, in the year, 2005, we had an opportunity to put a drama in Swami's presence.
Mm-hmm.
And that year we decided, usually Swami also expects that dramas are put for the devotees, for the students, for the audience.
Yes.
And Swami was very particular about that. This particular drama which we put, we made a very conscious decision that year that let's put one drama which nobody else may like, because of it not being very popular,
mm-hmm,
but Swami will love it. So, mm-hmm, let this drama be only for... It had no sets, mm-hmm, no great costumes, nothing. but a very, very simple drama, but it related to one of the highest, experiential learnings that the Upanishads give us. It was based on Chandogya Upanishad.
Okay.
And it was a beautiful experience, because Chandogya Upanishad is an Upanishad that encases one of the four Mahavakyas of Sanatana Dharma, which Swami used to often quote, that is Tattvamasi.
Yes.
The others being Aham Brahmasmi, Ayamatma Brahma, Prajnanam Brahma, and Tattvamasi. So Tattvamasi comes from Chandogya Upanishad. So it was a beautiful journey. You know, one reason why Swami encourages, students, devotees in samitis, young children, balvikas, youth, even elders, to participate in these kind of, putting up dramas and everything, is because it gives us an opportunity to delve deeper into Swami's teachings, deeper into the scriptures.
It is always more what happens to the participants.
Yes.
And the whole process of doing it than the actual performance
than the actual
on that
event
day.
Itself. In fact, this drama was a proof of that.
Mm.
Because before the drama happened in Sai Kulwant Hall, it was just put up in a 10 feet by 10 feet space, literally.
Mm-hmm.
And no sets, nothing. We just had a couple of mics and music playing in the background. And guess what? Swami calls the Vice Chancellor of the University, Shri S.V. Giri Garu, and tells Sir to make an announcement. And Sir makes an announcement about the drama, before the drama commences, and says that Swami is saying that henceforth, whatever drama is being put by students should be of this standard.
Oh my God.
And the thing was, there were no sets. There were no costumes in the drama. But one thing which was associated with the drama was an intention that this is purely for Swami's joy. No, nothing else. Because we knew it is usually very high Vedantic scriptures are usually unpopular for, audiences.
General mass. Yeah,
yeah, especially, youngsters and all that. They may or may not like. So it is unpopular in general. So you have to add a lot of masala and, stuff like that to embellish it. We did embellish the concept. But then it was one thing that was, I would say, about the drama is it was done only for Swami's joy. Nothing else. And the second thing is, we kept in mind that Swami has often told us that, see, fundamentally I have come here to make you realize that there is no difference between you and me. I am God, you are also God. Only difference is I know that I am God and you don't know at this moment that you are God. So I have come like the divine cosmic lion in this dream.
Yes.
This concept of dream is going to come little ahead. So I'm just, telling this in advance. But Swami said, I have come like a lion in this dream, which we consider as our life, this world, to awaken you from this dream.
Yes.
To roar and awaken you from this dream to your reality, to your true self, who you really are. And that is the central theme of Swami's teachings. And all the other works that we do, all the other sadhana that we do, is to drive us towards that, to eliminate completely our ego, or, to think that we are individual selves, and to experience that there is only God. There is only Swami. There is nothing other than that in this world. And to have that experiential realization, this precious human birth is given to us. And coming back to the story of the drama.
Yes.
So it was on Tattvamasi, and Swami made this statement that, all the drama should be like this. But the key factor there, which we enjoyed thoroughly, was Swami always, talked about this, pots are many, but the clay is one, or the mud is one. Jewels are many, but the gold is one. The jewel is a distortion that we see, but actually whether it's a bangle or a necklace or a ring or a earring, whatever it may be, the shapes and sizes are different, but fundamentally it's gold. In the same way, Swami used to say that, see, the potter may make the pots of different shapes. We have these teacup pots, we have longer jars to store water, we have pots to clay pots, even to cook food. So their sizes and shapes are all different, but fundamentally they are made of clay.
Yeah.
So while our focus is on the differences, we lose sight of what is the unity in that. In the same way, the world that we see has got variety of differences, but the unity in that is what is critical. And in Chandogya Upanishad, there is a very nice experience that is shared by Father Sage Udalaka to his son Shvetaketu.
Yes.
And I think this particular Upanishad is very important because here Shvetaketu is a great scholar. He was a scientist par excellence, philosopher par excellence. He had participated in what was then national and international conferences. And he had so-called published many papers in journals and peer-reviewed settings. So he was a kind of a highly reputed scholar of world class during that era. And that is what he represented, Shvetaketu. And such a person of great scholarly genius, of worldly knowledge and science and technology and philosophy, he comes home to meet his father. And his father, though he is very proud of his son's achievements that he has had, asks him a simple question and he says, have you learned that one thing, knowing which,
yes,
all that is known and all that is unknown can be known? Here is a very interesting aspect about an excellent teacher and an excellent student, which was highlighted in the drama and in Chandogya Upanishad. Here the father is always eager to raise the level of the student. His only intention was not to hurt the sentiment of his son, but his intention was that he should not get stuck with his intellectual prowess, but actually progress higher and higher. So the father asks him this question, have you known that one thing, knowing which, all that is known and all that is unknown can be known? Another interesting aspect is, this is a quality of a great master, a guru, and now is exhibited a quality of a good student. Shvetaketu, the son, now becomes a student and says, I don't know anything like this. All I know is that which can be known itself is so infinite in nature that what I know amounts only to a pebble.
Wow.
In the sense, it seems that even Newton had made this statement. He said that after all my achievements, I feel like a child playing on the shores of knowledge. Means he's not even entered the water, he's saying. Playing on the shores of knowledge with tiny pebbles. See, this is the quality of a good student. A good student is always having this understanding that that which he knows is very limited and that which he can know itself is unlimited.
And also highlights the quality of humility. So, Swami says humility, which is the hallmark of any educated person.
Yes, Shraddhavan Labhate Jnanam. That is, you have to have that Shraddha to continuously learn, and that Vinayam, that is humility, is an outcome of this kind of an attitude. So, seeing this humility of the son, and he says, Father, since you are the one who has this knowledge, he recognizes that all that is unknown, all that is known itself is infinite, and Father is saying, knowing one thing, you know all that is known and all that is unknown. It is beyond the comprehension of the mind, what that is, So he says, Father, since you possess that wisdom, that knowledge, I seek your blessings, I seek this wisdom from you. And thus, ensues a conversation between Sage Udalaka and Shvetaketu with very, very simple examples. But because the receptiveness of the student is so much, in spite of all his worldly scholarship, he was ready to put them aside and learn afresh. He emptied his vessel, to gain this knowledge afresh. So he was able to understand the truth. In fact, I think just 6 instances or experiential understandings were given to Shvetaketu by Udalaka. After each instance, his father would say, Tattvamasi Shvetaketu, that thou art Shvetaketu. This idea that I explained to you is the experiential truth that you are. Just to share one or two like that, Shvetaketu asks, if God pervades everything, which is an idea we just discussed, his question was, why don't I see him? Why don't I experience God everywhere? Because other than God, there is nothing, you say. Then how is it present here? There are 2 examples which the great sage Udalaka gives. In fact, Udalaka has something to do with a story related to Janaka, which is also important in the context of what we are discussing. Sage Udalaka gives this example of the seed of a Nyagrodha tree. Nyagrodha is loosely translated into banyan tree, but it is not really a banyan tree. In the scripture, it's mentioned as Nyagrodha tree. So the father takes the son. See again how learning happens. You know, it is in the lap of nature. It is on-site learning. Father takes the son Shvetaketu to a forest full of Nyagrodha trees. And obviously there are, some fruits have fallen. There are seeds of the tree which are also littered on the soil. So he asks Shvetaketu to bring one seed of the Nyagrodha tree. And he tells him to break it. So Shvetaketu breaks the Nyagrodha seed. And the father asks, what is inside that? He says, there are four more seeds, father. So then the father says, you break that also. He breaks it. And he says, now what do you see? He says, I see nothing. And then Sage Udalaka says, from this nothing, yes, this entire forest of Nyagrodha trees have sprouted. He says, Tattvamasi Shvetaketu, that thou art. This which you call as nothing, yes, thou art. This is your reality. See, this is what Swami is trying to highlight. The focus on the mud and not on the pot.
Yes.
You know, because when you focus on the pot, you see variety and so much variety that you don't see the underlying basis of it. In fact, in interactions with our students in the university, I ask them a simple question. You say everything you do, you have achieved. No doubt you have put a lot of effort and all. But a simple understanding to know that God permeates every bit of what you have done. Yes. In fact, it is He only who has done. Yes. I always tell them, don't take it as a philosophy. Take it as an experience. How? Then, you know, some students say, sir, but I have not experienced anything like that. Then we come to a very beautiful analysis and I tell them, see, how did you do your action? Your action happened through your body.
Yes.
Your body needs energy to do any action. In fact, if you keep upvas for, say, a fortnight, you won't have any energy to do any action. You cannot achieve anything. So you need regular fuel, and happily you are refueling three times a day or four times a day. But without fuel, the body cannot function. Basically, energy is required to run the body. So then I ask them, where do you get this energy from? So they say, from the food. I said, okay. So now there is two important, as scientists, you have to, very critically look at this and see. There are two aspects. One, you receive the energy in the form of food. And that is, the food was converted into energy. Food itself captured energy. There are two aspects. Food has captured some energy from somewhere, and in you it has converted it back into energy and your physical body, which is now put into action, and you claim great achievements through it. Now the question which I ask them is, now tell me where that energy came from. So they say, yeah, it's through photosynthesis. The sun's energy is captured by the plants, and through photosynthesis and all that, we receive it through food, grains and everything, fruits and vegetables. I said, very good. Now, that energy of the sun, you partake. So usually our session happens in the morning. So I say, you have had your breakfast. Now tell me, how are you digesting it? Do you know how to digest it in the first place? So while most of the, this is happens in a science class, so most of the non-bioscience boys, except a few, anyway claim ignorance to this. But some bioscience boys endeavor to say, no, we know the mechanism. I say, very nice. You know the mechanism, but do you do the mechanism? You know how it happens, how the whole digestion process happens.
But you have no control over it.
Do you have control? Do you do it actually? Do you digest it? They said, no, it happens. I said, see, the energy comes from the sun. It is captured by the plants, which you don't do anything to help in that way. On its own, it happens by nature's force. And that food you partake, and that food is converted back into energy in your body. Using that energy, the body functions, and you claim that I have done everything. Neither you have captured the energy in the plants, nor have you converted it in your body.
Yes.
So how then the actions that you do through the body, you claim that it is entirely attributed to you.
In fact, I also many times share on similar lines, especially when we say that someone says that I am self-made. You know, we in modern times you have these kind of notions about, you know, we have to be people who believe in, you know, achieving on your own, and this whole concept of self-confidence, which I always say it should have the capital S, not the small s. So if you see that, okay, perhaps I secured 99% marks in the examination, but if you look at the whole situation, I would say, on how many things did you really have control over? Anything could have happened. That morning when you're going to the examination hall, you could have slipped. Your pen would not have written. That day something would have happened in your family that would have not made it possible to write the exam. You could have fallen sick. I mean, we think that I have studied and I have written, but there are, for that one thing that you have done, there are another more than 99 things.
Yeah, 1,000 things have to go right, you know.
They have to go right for that to happen, and we don't even think about it.
Correct. And in fact, even our knowledge, if you see, it's accumulated.
Yes.
Like, as a child, we come in pristine, and every understanding that we have is accumulated at some point or the other from outside. And we process it, basically, you know. So, the whole idea here is for us to understand that who created the sun?
Yes.
You know, who created this energy? Who created this most complex, intricate model? See, that pervades everything, isn't it? So, if we actually look at our life and our own human system, it is very evident to us that God is everywhere.
Yes.
In fact, there is only God. Why? Because this energy is God.
Yes.
This energy is a manifestation of God. So, that way, if you see, everything is God, and God is a term that we are using to something that is not fathomable by the mind. As Swami described beautifully, when you transcend the body and mind, it is divine. So that which is operating from a space or from a point which is beyond the comprehension of the mind, that is divinity.
So that was what Uddalaka conveyed to Shatakirti.
So he pointed to that, nothingness or the emptiness there, which Shvetaketu was showing, and he said, "This nothing thou art. This is your reality. You are not this physical. You are not this pot. You are the mud." That is what he was trying to highlight to him. And another question which he said, that is, why do I not experience it? So Uddalaka just tells Shvetaketu to bring a pot of water and salt, you know, fistful of salt. And he says, you mix it now. So he mixes it. And he says, now taste from the north end of the pot, the south end of the pot, from the middle section of the pot, from the bottom section. Basically to say, any section of the pot, you drink one drop and see. And then he asks his son this question, so where did you find the water saline? Where did you find the salinity? Shvetaketu said, everywhere. He says, now, without doing anything, like, you know, any evaporation or anything like that, he said, remove the salt from the water. He said, I cannot do it. Now you tell me where the salt is in the water. So Shvetaketu said, everywhere. But can you see it? He said, no. Now Uddalaka explained and said, God permeates this universe in the same way. You cannot see him, but he permeates every atom of this universe. If you want to really find him in this universe, you have to do some process. That is sadhana.
That is sadhana.
That is required. But then that divinity that permeates every atom, tattvamasi shvetaketu, that thou art, is what Uddalaka. So this is the drama which Swami was year.
So what was your drama based on these stories?
On these ideas.
Okay.
That is to say that while the forms are many, there is only one underlying self in everybody. In fact, it started very interestingly as a conversation between Lord Krishna and the step of a temple. Both were made of the same granite. You know, the Lord Krishna idol in Sanctum Sanctorum was also made of the granite from the same quarry. And the steps of the temple also was made from the same quarry. So we showed, like, you know, people come and worship they step over on the step,
yes,
go into the sanctum, worship Lord Krishna and go away. After everybody has left, you know, Lord Krishna and the step both come alive.
Okay.
And the step makes a complaint to Lord Krishna, saying, this is injustice. Because I am also from the same quarry, I am also granite. You're also from the same quarry, you're also granite. So why are we being treated differently? You're being worshipped and I'm being stepped upon, you know. So then Lord Krishna tells this, this step in the temple, this whole story of Shweta Ketu. And there's a very deep meaning in this, because Swami beautifully puts this and says that a sculptor, when he takes a piece of granite, how does it become worshipable? Like, see, the step was also made. You know, the step doesn't undergo too much of treatment from its original form as a rock.
Yes.
But to make an idol of Krishna, there is tremendous work.
Yes.
And the sculptor actually visualizes the idol in the rock.
Correct.
And all he doesn't make a, a statue of Krishna. He actually chips away that which is not Krishna.
Krishna. Yes. Beautiful.
So Swami says, we are also like that. Originally, our nature is the self, Atma or Brahman, as Swami has described here. The mud is our original nature, not, or the clay is the original nature, not the pot. But since we are not aware, why are we not aware? Because of many blemishes in the mind, impurities of the mind. And that manifests as various habits in us and various tendencies and everything. So what Swami's, if you look at Swami's teachings more closely, what he asks us to practice in our day-to-day life, even starting as simple as do good, be good, see good, think good, feel good, this is the way to God, basically means to chip off that which is not us, you know, consistently. And the one thing which we should appreciate about this analogy, when we look at it, when a sculptor is doing and we look at it, is the chip that is chipped off from the rock that is going into, you know, actually manifesting the form of God in it, never sticks back. Once you, the sculptor chips off a particular part, that part doesn't stick back. But if you look at our life, one avagun or a blemish in our personality or habit, we give up for temporarily and then we again accept it back. So because of this, we do not experience the presence of divinity in our own existence. The reason is this avagun or this blemish that is there in our quality, we chip it off and we stick it back.
So that image of God that we have to become becomes so fuzzy, so convoluted, so distorted, because these pieces which should not be there keep coming back, and with time the whole image looks so disfigured.
Correct. So that is why Swami always wants us to change for good, to bring this transformation, not just change, but transformation.
Yeah.
Because these are all our formations. We have accumulated and formed these mental concepts, ideas, impurities of the mind are all accumulated. So he wants us to transform or transcend these formations, you know, chip them off. And once it's all chipped off, what is left is already divine. You don't have to achieve divinity, it is already there, you know. So that is the idea of Chandogya Upanishad, where this concept is actually presented, where, you know, pots are many, but clay is one or mud is one, which Bhagavan has highlighted here in Prema Vahini. But coming back to the Chennai experience, where we started, Swami told, Ekam Sat, Vipraha Bahudha Vadanti. And so I realized that Swami possibly wants to convey something about this, because again and again Bhagavan was asking about this topic. So I said, Swami, Bhagavan is saying Ekam Sat, there is only one, that is truth. Then why do we see this many in the first place? Why do we see multiplicity in the first place? Swami just, you know, laid back on his chair like this. This was inside Bhajan Hall. You know, his feet were on the tiger. And, you know, with his hair resplendent. Oh, the splendor of the Sadguru, the Jagadguru in front of us, Bhagwan. He just looked out of the Bhajan Hall door and, you know, just panned through the devotees who were seated there and who were seated inside the Bhajan Hall. And Swami said, Chudra, లోకం అంతా జీరో జీరో జీరో, దానికి ఏమి విలువ లేదు. దిస్ హోల్ వరల్డ్ మల్టిప్లిసిటీ దట్ యు సీ ఇస్ ఆల్ జీరో జీరో జీరో, ఇట్ హ్యాస్ నో వాల్యూ. హీ సెడ్ ఎన్ని జీరోలైనా వేసుకో, దానికి ఏం విలువ ఉండదు. హౌ మెనీ ఎవర్ జీరోస్ యు డ్రా, సిక్స్ జీరోస్, ఇట్ విల్ హ్యావ్ నో వాల్యూ. కానీ దాని ముందర ఒకటి పెడితే, ఇఫ్ యు పుట్ వన్ ఇన్ ఫ్రంట్ ఆఫ్ ద సిక్స్ వీల్యూస్, దానికి విలువ ఉంది. దెన్ యూ సీ ద ట్రూ వాల్యూ. హియర్ వాల్యూ మీన్స్ నాట్ ఓన్లీ ఇన్ టర్మ్స్ ఆఫ్ ఇట్స్ క్వాంటిటేటివ్ వాల్యూ, బట్ యాక్చువల్లీ ఇట్స్ క్వాలిటేటివ్ వాల్యూ, స్పిరిచువల్ వాల్యూ. దట్ ఈస్ ది ఎంటైర్ క్రియేషన్ ఇన్ ఆల్ ఇట్స్ మల్టిప్లిసిటీ ఈస్ జస్ట్ గాడ్, విచ్ ఇస్ వన్. అండ్ స్వామి సెడ్ దాట్ వన్ విచ్ లెండ్స్ వాల్యూ టు దిస్ మల్టిప్లిసిటీ, పాయింటింగ్ టు హిమ్సెల్ఫ్, స్వామి సెడ్ దట్ ఈస్ దిస్ వన్.
ఓ వావ్.
That is God. And without this God, there is nothing. If there is no God, there is no creation. So since there is God, there is manifestation of His creation, which because of our ignorance, as Swami describes here, we see as multiplicity, because our focus is on the variety affair. Our focus is not on the unity. For example, as simple as this, right now how digestion is happening in this body, which lends, how does a mango becomes my body? How does a apple become this form? You know, if I take the apple and cut it into two, and I give one apple to my brother, one piece to my sister, one piece to my brother, and one piece I have, it will become their respective bodies. So what is this divine technology that is running in all of us, you know? So that is divinity, and it is right here. We say that, how do I recognize divinity? Array, look at ourselves. How is this whole life functioning in the first place?
Yes.
If we look carefully at it, we will realize that, only misconception comes because the word God per se, people may understand it in different ways. But what is being told here by Sanatana Dharma, by Bhagavan, is that which is the undercurrent of everything is love, is God.
In fact, as you are sharing about this unity in the apparent diversity, one thought that comes is, we don't see how many things are common within us, between us. Like, for example, if you take both of us, okay, you perhaps your hairstyle is different, my hairstyle is different, the size of your specs is different, the size of my specs is different, and probably your color is different, my color is different. But if you see the number of things that are common to us, there are any number of things that are common to us, isn't it? I mean, the way your circulatory system works, the way my circulatory, the blood, the innumerable things, the way your body functions and the way my body functions, I think the things that are common between us are infinitely more than the things that are different between us. Isn't it?
Definitely. And this, I would say, is, as Swami would put it, the Adi Bhautikam way of looking at the unity in diversity. Adi Bhautikam means to look at this this creation made of five bhutas, pancha bhutas, that is earth, akasha, space, vayu, wind, agni, fire, apaha, or jal, that is water, and prithvi, fire, earth. So these pancha mahabhutas, the combination together is this world. So Adi Bhautikam refers to understanding this unity, as you just described, the energy basis, that is the unity of this. Then there is Adi Devikam, which is at a much subtler level, which I wouldn't go into at this point of time. But I would go straight, because of the context that Swami is speaking about in this section of Prema Vahini, I would go straight to the Adhyatmic aspect of it. I think that will also throw some light on the Adi Daivikam aspect. But Adhyatmic aspect. Adhyatmic refers to that which transcends both the levels of body and the mind.
Yes.
So here, the Adhyatmic understanding which Swami gives here is, Swami, I'm just reading out again this, the sentence which Swami has written here. If the world is real, it must be cognized even during the stage of dreamless deep sleep, but we are not conscious of it at all. So the visible world is as unreal as the dream world.
Yes.
You know, in this context is where Bhagavan also had mentioned, which we were discussing some time back. He says, I am the cosmic divine lion who has entered this dream to roar and awaken you to your reality. So which means Swami is referring to this, what we call as real life, as a dream. Isn't it?
Yes.
So why is he saying this? And it comes from a Chinnakatha actually, which Swami has in different discourses explained in beautiful detail, which maybe we can go into in some other session. But this is the Janaka Ashtavakra Samvad, you know, the conversation which happened between King Janaka, who was the father of Mother Sita, and his guru, sage Ashtavakra. It's a very, very interesting conversation. I'll like to present it in as brief way as possible. What happens is, you know, Janaka undergoes a particular experience. So this I'm presenting in slightly more details than the usual, but I'll try to keep it short as far as possible. Janaka underwent certain experience and he went to the court and declared that I have a question, whoever answers this question will be rewarded, whatever they ask for. And whoever fails to answer, they will be put into the jail. So, basically, there was no choice. So, whoever was a scholar, a vipra or a vidushi or, you know, a Brahmin or anybody who was learning the scriptures had to take the challenge, literally, and they had to try an answer, and he didn't find satisfactory answer to his question at all, and everybody was into the jail in that sense. This version of story is not very prevalent, and it is present in certain discourses of Swami. It's actually spread over many discourses of Swami, but probably we'll stitch them together and provide the reference sometime later for that. But just to get back to the story, you know, his question was, Adi Nijama, Idi Nijama. Is that truth or is this truth? Here, Nijam should not be taken literally. So that is why Swami colloquially uses as Nijam. Yes. But as Bhagavan in the discourse explains that, kya, if I have to say it in Sanskrit or in Hindi rather, I would say, kya ye sat ki wo sat. Is this sat the truth or is that sat the truth? Truth is the reality. So what happens is, his question is this truth or is that truth? Now, the issue was, he never explained to anybody what is this and that. So, nobody was able to give a satisfactory answer, and he was not happy with the answers that he received. So, when he went in exploration, he tried for a long time, and finally, to cut the long story short, sage Ashtavakra comes into his court, and then this discussion happens, and he says, is that the truth or is this the truth? And sage Ashtavakra, through his divine wisdom, he sees what is the source of this question. Though actually King Janaka did not articulate it clearly at that point of time. So he sees that the source of this question is a particular experience which King Janaka had. The experience was like this. One day Janaka went and, you know, he was taking rest. And he went to his room and slept on his golden bed. And he went into sleep. And he had a phenomenal experience after that in his dream. He saw that, you know, he was very laid back and relaxed because there are no enemies actually attacking him. Everything was prosperous in his kingdom, so there were no problems. So King Janaka decided to take it easy. Taking the opportunity, some surrounding kingdoms from there, the kings of those kingdoms, you know, took the opportunity and attacked Janaka's kingdom, that his capital, that is Mithila. And as a result, he was not able to defend because he was not alert. And he had lost the palace, the capital, and he had to run away. He didn't want to be captured. So he ran away from the backside of the palace into the streets. And he went around begging everywhere. And everybody noticed that this is their king. And they would say, how dare you come and beg here? You have left us in the hands of the foes. And you are running away like this. So they wouldn't give him food. And some people started chasing him so much so he had to run into the forest. And he was, for 2-3 days he had not eaten anything, no food, no water, nothing. So in that deep state of agony and hunger and thirst, he saw under a tree one sadhu was sitting with one bowl of porridge or what we call as kheer or payasam. And he begged him for that bowl. And then the sadhu says, no, I have already partaken this. Mm. So I don't know if I can give you. So then King Janaka tells him, you know, because he is a jnani, this is happening in his dream, but you know, his wisdom still plays there. And he's not the Brahma jnani though. Here we are talking about the scholarship of the world. Mm. And at that point of time. So he tells him that, no, there is something called apat dharma, emergency dharma. That even if you have partaken food, somebody is hungry and their life is at stake,
yes,
you can always give your food, which you have partaken also, to preserve his life.
Mm.
So then he says, okay, so if I won't incur sin, I will give you. And the sage gives that bowl of, payasam or kheer to King Janaka. And as he is about to partake, he moves a little distance to go under another tree to sit and partake. As he is going, you know, there are different versions of this tree. One eagle came, or some other animal came. Mm. But the version I like, which I would like to share, which is more dramatic, is two wild boars were fighting, you know, and both crashed into each other. Mm. And one flew and hit the hand of Janaka.
Oh.
So this mud bowl filled with porridge or kheer flew from his hand and it crashed on the soil. Because it was made of clay, it broke into pieces and all of that payasam or the kheer became part of the earth.
Mm.
So he was not able to eat. So he cleansed that earth, unable to eat food, and he shouted in deep agony, hunger and thirst. And as he shouted, he opens his eyes and he sees he's sleeping on his golden throne. There is a banquet of 100 dishes in front of him and hundreds of servants are waiting to serve him.
Mm.
So he was bewildered. So his question was, in my dream, as long as I was experiencing it, it was so real.
Mm.
And this is what we all go through also.
Yes.
While the dream is happening, we experience it's very real.
Mm.
And when I woke up from the dream, my golden palace, my golden throne, all the servants, they also seem equally real.
Real.
But I say that is a dream and this is reality. But he was a very sharp student again. Just like how Shvetaketu, King Janaka was an amazing student.
Mm.
So he realized that no, something is wrong here.
Mm.
So this question started eating him up. Is that truth or is this truth? Because both during its time, during its duration, felt like it is real.
Mm.
So he was unsure. So Ashtavakra realized the source of this question. And then he gives answer to King Janaka. He says, na ye sat, na wo sat.
Yes.
Neither this is true nor that is true. So King Janaka begs him to explain. He said, this answer touches my heart. I am feeling that it is correct, but please explain how. And then Ashtavakra says very beautifully, he says, sat means, that is reality or truth means, that which does not change in three periods of time, past, present and future, or under any circumstances. Under any circumstances, or in three periods of time, past, present and future, that which remains the same, that is sat or truth. Then he says, look at your own experience. Now I would request all the listeners also to look at their own experience here, because this is very real to us. So Ashtavakra then says, see, if what you experience in the dream was truth or reality, by the definition of truth, it has to remain the same in three periods of time and in all circumstances, whether it is dream state, sleep state or waking state.
Yes.
It has to be the same. And it should remain just like that. Ashtavakra then reminded the king and said, see, in your dream you became a pauper. From a prince or from a king you became a pauper. And you are begging for food and you cried out of hunger and thirst. Isn't it true? The king was shocked because he has not explained this detail. So he said, yes, that is true. He says, but now in this waking state,
yes,
in a future time from the dream, is it still valid? Is it true? Are you a pauper now or are you the king? He says, no, I am a king. I am not a pauper and I have everything with me. He says, that means that which you experience in the dream is untruth. It is not truth because it has changed with time and circumstance. Circumstance means avastha. Avastha means from dream state he has come to waking state. Yeah. So he says in a different state and in a different time, the experience of that has completely changed for you. So that cannot be the truth. So he says that which you experience in dream is untruth. It is not truth. Na ye sat, na wo sat. So then he says, then how is this not true? What I'm experiencing, it is very real. I see you, though in dream also it felt like that only, but please explain how this is not true. Then Ashtavakra says, see, now you are the emperor, king. Have you lost your kingdom? He says, no. You own everything? Yes. Then in your dream also, why this reality did not reflect as it is? If it is the truth, then it should have remained the same even in your dream. It should not have changed. But it was not the case. In the dream you became a pauper.
Yes.
But as soon as you got up, you realize you are still the king. Which means this experience of being the emperor now is also not the truth. Because it has changed with your state, which is from moving from waking to dream state, and it has changed with time. So that which changes with time and different circumstances and states of your being, is not truth. That which remains the same is the truth. Then Ashtavakra explains and says, you, O king, who was the witness of the dream and this experience which you called as waking state, is the one who was present there also? Is the one who is present now also? That presence which you are is the truth, because that has not changed. It is present even in your deep sleep. Only thing, because of deep sleep is a state of complete ignorance. So you don't know about your presence. You're not aware. But in dream also you felt you existed. Now also you feel you exist. Your existence and your presence, that is a witness to all these states, is the truth, is sat. Now the question comes here, the technical question that comes here is, how do I know in deep sleep state I exist? You know, that is an important question to ask. And the clarity here can come from Anumana Pramana. That is, to you can have understanding based on extrapolation or speculation from your own experience. How is that? When we go to sleep and we have a deep sleep, no dream, nothing, and we get up, we feel very rejuvenated and fresh. And if anybody asks us this question, so what did you do till now? You say, oh, I had a deep sleep. Isn't it? Now the point is, this deep sleep is there in our memory. Means we know we have experienced. Our memory has recorded that we have had deep sleep. Why? How do we know this? If our memory has not recorded that we have had deep sleep, when somebody questions us, what were you doing, our previous memory should have been of the point before going to sleep. But our memory tells us that, no, I had a deep sleep. Which means it is recorded in the memory.
You existed.
It's recorded. I'm coming to the point of existence. That is the most important thing here. So, memory was recording there. But what is the content? What is the data which was recorded? Nothing. Because in deep sleep there is nothing, there is no object to record. So nothing was the data, but it was recorded in the memory. Now the other point is, if you have to record anything in your memory, two things have to happen. One, the information should be presented to you, or you should be in the presence of that information. Second thing is, you should be present, which is actually the first thing. You know, first thing is you should be present. Second thing is you should be in the presence of that information to record that information. For example, if somebody asks what happened to the second India versus Sri Lanka test match, though I might not have seen the test match, somebody tells me that, oh no, India won the test match. So I am present. And I am also in the presence of the information. So I have recorded it. It is in my memory. So if somebody asks me what happened to the India-Sri Lanka test match, I can say, oh, I heard that India has won. Why? Because I was present and I recorded the experience or the information. So in deep sleep, if our memory is able to tell us that there was deep sleep, what is the content of this deep sleep? Nothing. But our memory is telling that, which means we were present and we recorded the information.
Yes.
But the information is null.
Yes.
And hence, there is no descriptives to the information. Mm. That is why we are not able to describe deep sleep. Mm. Except that it is very blissful at the end of the day. You know? But our presence, which is common in the waking state now,
yes.
When we have a dream also, we feel that we are seeing it or we are experiencing it. And in the deep sleep also we are present through this understanding.
Yes.
So that presence which is there in three states is the reality. That is what Bhagavan explains
yes,
here.
That alone exists.
That alone is the truth.
That is
and
the truth.
That is not separate from God.
Yes.
So recognize yourself to be the clay and not its modifications.
Mm.
Recognize yourself to be the presence in all the states of your experience.
Yes.
And that is your reality. That is what Bhagavan has highlighted
In fact, there is not much time to go through a very beautiful conversation that Swami blessed Rani Ma, who is a great spiritual aspirant. And once Swami asked her, do you have any domestic problems? He said, yes, Swami, I have so many domestic problems. Swami says, you know what? There's a way I can tell you how to solve all your problems. And she says, Swami, what is that way? And then Swami mentions this, you know, when you see dream, what happens? And she says, Swami, I feel it is so real. Swami says, see, you feel that you are real, right, in your dream. And now, in the waking state also, you feel you are real, the same Janaka experience. And then Swami says, if you realize that this also is a daydream, because this is also a daydream. That is a night dream, this is a daydream. If you realize that this is a daydream and think that I am not this body, you know, I am only that soul, I am only that I. If you constantly tell yourself that this is a daydream, I am only playing a role, then Swami said that all the problems will disappear because they will not touch you. Because you are not the body, they will not touch you. And then Bhagavan says, I know it is difficult to get this awareness, you have to practice. But Swami is so compassionate. Swami said, see, if you don't get this awareness, no problem, you pray to me. You pray to me and I will give you that awareness. I mean, says, see, if you keep praying to me for all these material things, I'll give you that, but you know, that will only put you into more illusion.
Correct.
But if you pray for this, I'll give you this awareness. Then you will
In
not
fact,
have any problem.
In fact, that is what Bhagavan used to very often tell all of us, that I have come here to give you this.
Yes.
This awareness.
Yes.
But, you know, I give you whatever you ask
you
for.
Ask for.
The hope that one day you will ask for what I have come to give
yes,
you.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's pray to Bhagavan that we consciously, sincerely, and from the depth of our heart ask for this. Not superficially, but, you know, really long for this experience. I think if we pine for this experience, then Bhagavan will be only eagerly waiting to shower us with this experience, because that is the only thing that he would love to give us, actually. And I think the moment the grace of God dawns on us, then everything else that we think are problems will just melt away and we will just be bliss. Bliss, B-A-B-A, being awareness, bliss, Atman, that's what we will become. Wonderful. Thank you so much, Brother Giridhar. It was such a fantastic session. I think a beautiful elucidation of what Bhagavan has mentioned in this third segment of chapter 14. I know there are so many more experiences actually to substantiate this. And I think, dear listeners, I would urge you to ruminate on what we have discussed, you know, and see how you can practice this in real life. In fact, I wanted to share more tips, but there's no time. But there are ways how you can really make it a really practical experience. So do think about it, do try and see how you can make this a part of your daily life, and share with us your experiments. Let us together strive to walk on this path of love, the stream of love that Bhagavan has so painstakingly written for all of us. Thank you so much for being with us all through this day, where we have a series of programs on this beautiful Thursday. As always, if you have any queries or comments, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. Offering this program, this lovely satsang at the lotus feet of that Param Sat, divine preceptor, master, our Sadguru, Bhagavan Baba, we bring this day-long Thursday series of programs to a close. Thank you so much. Sairam.